This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It is almost the end of the month, and joining me today are Wong Siew Lin and Lau Yau Hua, the founders and the everything behind online journalism portal, environmental journalism portal, Makaranga. And guys, what a farcical month it's been, right, in terms of official responses to some of the nation's environmental crises, you know, from claims of orangutans attacking humans to the belief that logging is good for tigers. I mean, these sorts of comments have been coming in. We're going to discuss how we should the community respond to such statements. And we're also going to explore other things in today's roundup, the sad news of dead turtles found in Terengganu, and also the renewed focus on tiger conservation. And there's a lot more coming up. Welcome, both of you. How are you today?
Fine. Hello, hello. Yeah, well, hopefully the holiday tomorrow will give us a break from all of this.
less fast, right? Yeah, we don't need that right now. But yes, let's get straight to that. So we know that earlier this month, Plantations, Industries and Commodities Minister Zuraida Kamarudin gave a rather bizarre claim that orangutans kill people when they see them. Shortly after that, the Kelantan Forestry Department Director Abdul Kalim Abu Sama said that areas that are deforested are actually good for tigers. Yes, I won't even say anything. You guys, tell me, what was your response to these responses from officials? Yes.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to have the year start off with comments like these. Our wildlife appears to have taken a huge slamming by 2022, which is a bit unfortunate. So let's start with the orangutan comment. Now, Zuraida said that her comment was taken out of context. Okay, so let's look at the context. Now, on January 5th, the Malaysian Palm Oil Council had their annual and very important meeting, actually. It's a gathering of everybody's interested in the palm oil industry. They call it the Reach and Remind Friends of the Industry Seminar and Dialogue. It happens once a year. The who's who of, you know, NGOs, the foreign diplomats, media, everyone is there. It's a very, very important meeting. So she said this comment then, in Malaysia, if you see an orangutan, it will kill you first, not you kill the orangutan first, correct? She said during a speech, right? Yeah. Now, I'm just going to look at the context and perhaps play the devil's advocate. This is one part of it is open. One part of this meeting is open. I've actually attended one before a couple of years ago with a different minister. One part of it is open to the media. Another part of it is a closed door meeting. Now, she says in her statement after this furore happened that it was a closed door meeting, right? And then she says it was taken out of context. Now, sure, it could be like a figure of speech. And we know the anti-palm oil lobby in the EU and US has been using orangutan as a focus for years and years and years. And it's a very powerful emotive way of going against palm oil and deforestation. Now, she says, Zuraida says, the Saudi Arabia textbook. So outside of that means outside the EU and the US, showed that the palms were destroying orangutan habitats. Yeah. Now, the Middle East is one of the new markets for palm oil for Malaysia and Indonesia because of the lobbying by the EU and the US, right? Mm. So this is, of course, something of concern to people in the industry because then is this potentially new and big market also going to be impacted by the same sort of messages? So that's one. And what happened was, I think just yesterday or something like that, Zuraida was actually in Jeddah opening a new Middle Eastern regional agri-commodity office, where they look at palm oil, they're looking at rubber, looking at timber. So it's a new market, right? Mm. Now, that's one. The second thing is, we don't know who took the video. Now, the political scene is so toxic. According to Kini TV, it first appeared on TikTok, and then it was promoted by Zuraida's former colleague in PKR, former Pandan MP, Rafizi Ramli. Okay? So we always have to bear in mind the context, the bigger picture of these kinds of messages, why they are said, when they are said, and how they get out. And then, you know, as conservationists and activists, what sorts of responses are adequate, you know? So I'm just going to play the devil's advocate, and Yao Hua will have something to
Well, the fact that, you know, if it's true that it was said in a closed door event, then I think it's even more revealing, right? Because what one says in a safe environment, what perceived to be safe environment, we should be more reflective of their, you know, their character or their thoughts, right? Rather than one is what is said openly in the public. Well, you know, yeah, fine. It could have been a jest. It could have been taken out of context. But, well, I'm not exactly sure if it was taken out of context. I believe it was more, you know, it could have been more of a jest, but still, it would have cast a very bad, you know, reputation or bad image impression on how the Malaysian plantation industry and ministries, you know, perceived wildlife, right?
Yeah.
And I just feel that, you know, if it's something said in a kopitiam, oh, okay lah, you know, like, and you're a person of no, not much importance, you know, political importance, or you're not a person authority in power, it's fine. But she's not, her ministry is not. And so I think, you know, really our public figures and especially our ministers need to be a lot more responsible of what they say, what they do. Yeah, some of the errors that she made, whether in jest or not, is just a bit too, you know, too off the charts, like, you know, certainly there are no lions in Malaysia,
yeah.
Right? So, yeah, it just gives, I don't think it helps Malaysia's case for promoting oil palm or all palm oil as a sustainable industry, right? Mm. It just doesn't, so I think we just need to be a lot more careful now while we as being the public figures and the ministers. Yeah, I would say that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was bizarre, right? I mean, I can't think of any other word rather than, well, ignorant comes to mind as well. But I mean, there was another equally bizarre sort of comment, but this one tried to use a scientific study to back it up. And that was, of course, over in Kelantan. You know, we've been seeing a lot of issues about human-tiger conflict there. And the forestry department director came out to say that deforested areas are actually good for tigers. The writers of that study came out to say that, you know, that also was taken out of context. Yeah, anything you want to add to that discussion?
Yeah, I guess, first of all, so Abdul Kalim Abu Sama is actually the department director of the Kelantan Forestry Department. Okay, he's in charge of forestry. It was at an event. Utusan Malaysia and Malaysia Kini were two of the media who were there, and they reported, they probably asked him the question, I'm not sure, you know, what comment do you have? And it was really in response to the killing of Ane Along, an Orang Asli man in Kampung Sao, Gomusang, on January 7th, you know. And then subsequently, there was a memorandum sent by the Jaringan Kampung Orang Asli Kelantan to the Prime Minister asking for a moratorium on deforestation, which has been going on in Kelantan, he said, since the present Kelantan government came to power 23 years ago, right? Yeah. So he came out, he said this, his words were in, you know, basically, in other words, logging makes it easier for tigers to hunt their prey compared to the thick jungle. And he didn't cite the report. He didn't even name the name of the author or the authors. He just said a researcher in Sarawak, right? Then, you know, you've got state government officials, you know, perhaps this is an even bigger thing coming up to support what he's got to say. Now, the lead author penned a letter to all news and you know, media, and they all covered it, including BFM, clarifying what the study was, right? It was done in 2009. It was done to obtain information on tiger population density, right?
But it's not necessarily the lead author of the study that the director cited, right? Because we don't actually exactly know which study he cited. Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, so the lead author was working with WWF at that time. So WWF also issued a statement, you know, it's like, so every time someone, you know, one of these people in authority perhaps make a, well, this is different because it wasn't a throwaway statement. I think it was quite deliberate. And it was defending, you know, logging practices, selective logging practices in Kelantan, but it's problematic when you, the way that it was cited and the way it was reported, maybe.
Yeah, certainly. You know, it's, I think it's easy to say that in no way in general logging would be good for tigers, right? Tiger ecology. I mean, the easiest correlation would be if logging is that great for tigers, then we should see an increase in tiger numbers over the years rather than a decrease. But we do not see that. But you know, what was picked out of this study by Dr. Damaraj is that well, his study was done in 2009, and it was like a 9-month camera trap survey of tigers in one forest reserve in Kelantan, right? And then over the 9 months, they found 6 tigers, which comes down to a density of about 2.5 tigers per 100 kilometers square, right? And that's actually a high density of tigers compared to an earlier survey done in Taman Negara. And this forest reserve that was surveyed in Kelantan had gone through 2 rounds of sustainable logging or selective logging. So, you know, so then one of the results, you know, one of the interpretation would be that selective logging or sustainable logging could, you know, provide an environment where tigers could actually thrive, mm-hmm. right? The main conclusion that was that Dr. Damaraj did in his study was that, so we should cast away this fallacy or this myth that sustainable logging or selectively logged forests are bad environments. And so then, you know, because the way logging happens in Malaysia is that they go from sustainable logging, then they say it's a degraded forest, then they'll convert that forest into non-forest, like, you know, development, oil palm, whatever it is, right? Yeah. Or they clear it for forest plantation, and then it langsung, it doesn't become a, it cannot support any tigers at all. So that was the point. He was trying to say that, you know, sustainable logging can, you know, support tigers. But then, yeah, you know, then it was taken so way out of context, I think. Yeah.
I think one of the other questions that might have come up is that, like, why should a forestry director talk about wildlife? I think that's one of the other things, like, you know, surely why don't you go to the Perhelatan director or something like that, you know?
That's interesting. But that's something my guest from an NGO called Kwasa brought up as well, because he was like, why are you talking like you don't actually have probably don't have the knowledge about it. Sorry, Yahua, I interrupted you.
No. Whether they have the knowledge or not, I do not know. But I was just going to add that, you know, the silver lining of this is I was so happy when I saw, you know, Dr. Damaraj come up to talk about it. You know, at least now we have the scientists' perspective on this, right? They have their take on it. And so I think that's great. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And yes, and while we're on the topic of tigers, of course, there's been a lot of coverage on that, a lot of news about tigers. I think most recently, of course, we had the 4th Asia Ministerial Conference on Tiger Conservation that just ended recently. And we know that ministers and senior officers from 13 range countries have expressed their commitment to saving the wildlife. We've seen lots of commitments going on. Anything you want to talk to me about? Yes, this very, very important meeting. Yeah.
Yeah, well, yes, the meeting is all around good news at the end of it. So this meeting was quite huge. They had like 300 participants, right, from the tiger range countries in Asia. So it's quite huge. And at the end of it, the ministers of these tiger range countries, you know, they adopted or endorsed, you know, this joint Kuala Lumpur joint statement on tiger conservation. And it listed out 13 points to aimed at stabilizing and increasing wild tiger numbers and their prey numbers, you know, so that's just awesome. And if you look at these 13 points, right, it's everything that's needed to still have healthy wild tigers for our grandchildren. Mm-hmm. So it includes everything from protecting the habitats, you know, financing, strengthening enforcement, sharing intelligence, and involving indigenous peoples. So everything that, you know, one could draw up, it's in there. In those 13 points. And if you want to look it up, you can go to the Facebook of the Ministry of Energy and Natural Resources. And I think it's on their Facebook. Yeah, you need to look it up there. So that's all great, right? So of course, we know the important thing is what comes after, right? Mm-hmm. And just a few days before, this is of interest. This is really interesting to me. A few days before the conference, the minister of Ketsa, Takiuddin Hassan, he actually proposed, this might be one of the cuff thing again that he said at an event, but he proposed actually that we install tracker collars on, you know, the remaining tigers in Malaysia so that we can actually track these endangered animals, right? And he was citing the example of, putting the collars on the elephants so that we know where the elephants are. Yeah, I just found this interesting. I actually do not know if this is an awesome, awesome idea or if it's even feasible because, you know, as we say in the Kelantan study, you know, 2.5 tigers in 100 kilometers square is considered high density. It's not like finding elephants, right? No, I think finding tigers are much harder.
And also, well, perhaps the start might be the Orang Asli villages, which are still under threat in Kuala Lumpur by these tigers. I think they're sending in the Senoi Prak. Oronasli Rangers to protect the villagers. I just wonder what they're going to do to protect the villagers, you know. Well, there's 150 million tigers left, and definitely minus one, because they found the tiger that attacked the poor deceased man mm-hmm. and shot it. They said in defense, and it's actually allowable under the Pelican Act. But anyway, just wanted to say one more thing that is actually quite critical, and it is to tiger conservation, and it is making sure there's enough prey. Mm-hmm. Just to make a note, and this was also said at the conference, that one of the major tiger preys is actually potentially in danger, and it's wild boar, and it's because of the advent of the African swine fever in Peninsular Malaysia. It has devastated Sabah. Both commercial as well as wild pigs. So it's now here in Peninsular Malaysia. So that's something that's a little bit worrying.
Yes, and there was a huge outbreak in Paya Mengkuang, am I correct?
Exactly, that's right. They've culled, I think, about thousands of commercial pigs, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thousands.
So it doesn't look very good. I mean, yes, lots of lofty sort of...
Good intentions.
Good intentions. There's lots of good intentions, especially on paper and from the conferences. Let's just see what I get from the guests who I speak to, like moratorium on logging. Maybe that would be a very, very good start. Yeah, maybe that's something that they can look to. So it's not been good news for our wildlife, as you said at the start, Siew Lin, and even more not so good news, moving away from terrestrial wildlife to our marine wildlife. Over in Terengganu, we've been hearing reports of lots of dead turtles being found. Can you? I actually missed this, but tell me about it and what's been happening. Not yes. Starting the year well, sorry.
it's tough. So, sorry about this, guys, listeners. I think go and do something happy after listening to this podcast.
Lunar New Year coming up, have a lovely reunion dinner.
Yeah. So we'll again just mention this, five turtles have been found dead in Terengganu in January alone. Different parts of the coast, not just in one place, and on islands as well. Last year, the Terengganu Fisheries Department recorded a total of 51 turtle deaths. So we are looking as if we might actually meet that number of deaths. Unfortunately, most of them are green sea turtles, mm-hmm. and they don't rule out, the Fisheries Department don't rule out criminal elements, because one actually had its shell split open, so that's quite devastating. This year, one baby turtle was found dead due to plastic pollution, and two were found dead, they believe, due to drowning in trawl nets. And these two that were killed by trawl nets were 20 years old.
Yeah, so in response, right, the Terengganu Fisheries Department Director, Ruzaidi Mamat, sort of called out on all the trawl operators, right, to, quickly install this turtle excluder device, right, or turtle removal devices, which is actually mandatory in Terengganu, right? So if you're operating a trawl net, right, you must, compulsory by law to actually have this device in your trawl net. And this device, it's a very simple thing. It's a metal grate that you put into your trawl net so that the stream or the small fishes can pass through, but the turtle cannot, right? So the turtle doesn't get caught in the end of the net, but then there's also a gap in the middle of the net that the turtle can escape from, sure. Right? And it's proven to work. And so this excluder device has been a legal requirement in four states in Malaysia since 2017. So that's Kelantan, Terengganu, Pahang, and Johor, right? And there's an NGO in Sabah called Marine Research Foundation that's been working on this, to promote this device. And they're focusing on Sabah now, which I believe it's not a legal requirement yet. So the point I want to make is that whoever is not using this turtle excluder devices in Terengganu, right, it's doing it illegally. So, I think the director, instead of calling out to them to do it, should really be enforcing and, catching those who do not do it, right? Yeah.
Again, going back to, all these good intentions, but yeah, what happens after these good intentions have been expressed? And I mean, if it's part of the law, the law should be brought down upon them, isn't it? Those who, yeah, okay. Okay, it's not been a great month, but I mean, the point is we must keep highlighting these issues, otherwise people won't know. And that, of course, is why Makaranga is around. Yes, so if anybody would like to read the articles that you guys are working on, of course, just head to makaranga.org. My thanks to both of you. I've been speaking to Wong Siew Lin and Lau Yau Hua. They are basically the everything behind Makaranga. If you miss any part of our interview, you can always download the podcast at bfm.my/earth, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.